This is 16.9 The Podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 16.9 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 12 years, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon and into what stuff means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. You can listen to episodes online, get them off iTunes or Google Play, or subscribe using a podcast app. Whatever way you choose, they're free and there's a new one weekly. The 16.9 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported from the start by Jeremy Gavin and his team at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. In the out-of-home space, Lamar Advertising is huge. Baton Rouge-based media company is in 160 metro areas in the U.S. and has more than 3,300 roadside digital billboards. The company is steadily adding more digital, notably in environments like airports. Lamar, for example, just lit up an impressive and expensive network inside the baggage area at the domestic terminal of Las Vegas's McCarran Airport. Ian Delamore heads digital for Lamar, a gig that has him working with out-of-home specialists, brands, and the vendors who feed into the technology ecosystem. We get into a bunch of things in this chat, including data-driven advertising, programmatic, and what people should know when they dip their toes into digital out-of-home. Ian, thanks for joining me. Can you give me a sense of the size of Lamar's footprint across the U.S. and into Canada?
Yeah, so Lamar Advertising, we have over 160 DMAs with our inventory, which accomplishes over 350 plus. That includes billboards, roadside digital screens, as well as airports and our transit assets as well.
And how much of that is digital?
So of that, a small percent. So actually only 3,300 plus are roadside large format digital today.
Mm-hmm. And is there a reason it's still small? I certainly understand that the capital cost of putting a roadside LED board is still significant.
Yeah, the cost has a little bit to do with it, but it's more about the demand that we have in each individual market. So we analyze and we have a team that looks at where is the demand and where is the supply. And what we also look to do is not oversaturate markets with digital, because a lot of people ask that question, you know, why not just get rid of all classic screens and move strictly to digital? And we feel there's still a place, a pretty significant place for a static or a classic message while incorporating digital within the market. The other thing that we look to do is often look at where do we have greenfield or new opportunities where maybe there were some restrictions in the past and today they've gotten a little bit looser, or just new markets where Lamar has come in and either purchased a new company or purchased new land to where we deploy digital. So it's a pretty detailed process that we go to, but it's mostly driven by demand more than anything.
And is a lot of the digital just on billboards? I mean, you recently did McCarran Airport in the baggage area with digital like everywhere.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful screen. And we are looking at all of our airport assets and how do we deploy more digital within those networks. We're also looking in some of our transit assets as well. A lot of those have a little bit more moving parts to them as far as the length of the contract that we have with those different municipalities and different transit authorities, but that is something that we're looking at as well.
And is there more opportunity? Like, would you do airports because just the profile of travelers and so on, it indexes better in terms of demographics?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the rationales, but also the ability to have more dynamic content and to be able to serve smarter messages to consumers. I think the McCarran example is a perfect one. You know, as that screen evolves, we can use our platform to serve different ad messages to different flights that may be landing from different parts of the world to have creative messaging talk to that consumer. So that's an important part of what we do is the dynamic content of what the digital deployment focuses on.
Is that hard to sell and to explain to media planners, or are they starting to get it?
Yeah, so I've been with Lamar for 14 years, and I've spent about 12, air quotes, preaching the gospel of digital capabilities. I feel the last 2 to 3 years, brands are really starting to get it. The out-of-home specialists are really starting to hone in on the importance of it. And we're seeing more and more campaigns where they're just, even at basic use of tapping into real-time weather feed or a real-time traffic or real-time sports scores into that brand's message.
Yeah, I got a sense kind of looking at the marketplace lately that, yeah, you're seeing more dynamic data being used, but it really is a baby steps kind of thing. Like, you know, it's raining, so trigger this particular piece of media instead of this other one.
Right. Yeah, and it's as us as humans, you step away from working in the out-of-home industry, and just us as humans, you're constantly bombarded with ads and the psychographics of a consumer. When you're providing real-time relevant messages that make sense, the value of that brand starts to go up and you start to really pay attention, because out-of-home alongside of maybe mobile is really the only medium where we can literally change digital messages based on real-time events that occur. And the way that we explain that to brands and why they should be using it is because it speaks to that consumer at that moment, and it makes that brand become more relevant in that time and place. And what we're seeing is brands are really starting to embrace it, and they're not doing the basic, you know, hey, it's 76 degrees outside, you should go buy XYZ popsicle. They're starting to get really creative with using the data to kind of playfully integrate it in without being so literal with that data message that goes live.
Is the evangelism work that you do, is that more with the brands than with your sales team? Because I would imagine this, when you started getting into dynamic stuff, that's pretty hard for somebody who's sold static displays or static faces for, you know, decades in some cases, to kind of go in and help them imagine your campaign.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk. The way Lamar's structured, there's different levels. On the national level, there is a lot of conversation that we have direct with brands, but we're seeing a lot of more of our friends in the out-of-home specialist space, the agency level, where they want to make sure that they continue to be relevant. So they're asking like, hey, what could we do? What is the coolest way we could use data? And we're seeing some great campaigns where first party data is being used more, where they go into the brand like a Spotify and they say, hey, look, we can tap into real time Spotify trending music, or actually tap into a Spotify consumer's account and display that content onto digital because it makes sense at this moment in time. And so they're starting to embrace it. The biggest success that we see at Lamar is the local level. It's so easy because there's not so many layers and you're directly talking to that woman that owns a boutique, and you can talk about, hey, when it begins to rain, you can promote those rain boots. And when it's sunny out, you can promote that swimsuit that you have on sale. So at the local level, we're seeing a lot more success, but I would say the national brands are starting to fully embrace it. And we're starting to see some really cool campaigns that are been running live on our screens and our competitor screens.
You mentioned relevance and the need for media planners and agencies to remain relevant in the conversation. Is that a direct result of things like programmatic buying?
Yeah, sure. Programmatic is a part of what and how you remain relevant. I would argue, because we're in this space of programmatic where Lamar and our friends and competitors are focused on going after the digital agencies and that digital dollar while still providing what the out-of-home specialists need. And I would argue, and I think a lot of my friends in the space would say, they really just want more automation and easier to discover and easier to buy the out-of-home space. So as we're continuing to shift and focus on programmatic and how we expose our real-time inventory to be purchased by some of the massive digital agencies and DSPs, at the same time, we're looking and reaching out to our agency partners and out-of-home specialists to say, hey, if we gave you access to our inventory onto your platform, would that help your buying process speed up? Would that allow you to be more relevant to layer in your different data sets that the consumer's buying and allow for you to get larger budgets? So right now, Dave, we're in this medium split where we're focusing on two different avenues, and it's been interesting. But often we see folks quickly raise their hand and say, oh, we want programmatic too. And once we walk through just a quick little test, we quickly realize they really just want some automation and the ability to buy inventory easy.
Right. It would seem, and I'm not directly in your business, that programmatic kind of neuters somewhat the ability to be highly creative DMA by DMA or location by location, just because programmatic seems at least to be a little bit commoditized in terms of, we've got this set of ads and we want to push them in all these different places, but to then go to the next degree and have it tapping into data sets and so on would get awfully complicated very quickly and hard to do at scale.
Yeah, so you'd be surprised, and we were actually surprised when we first entered this space around 6.5 years ago. We thought that that would be the case. We thought the focus would be high-level top DMAs only, but we're actually seeing more, I call conditional relevant campaigns. We have one that's been running for over 4 years on the programmatic side, Zyrtec, and they're basically running across 60 markets only whenever pollen levels are high. We ran an amazing campaign at the end of last quarter, and it's going to run again in Q4 in 2019 as well with Carhartt, the clothing apparel brand, where they utilize real-time weather data overlaid programmatically to have that creative content play. When certain conditions are met, they're promoting different products that they have. And then lastly, the super hyper local, which I love to see in programmatic, is a big box retailer that has a great pickup grocery app. I think you could figure out who that is. And they're literally running across over 100 plus DMAs today, promoting that app. And it speaks to that local level, all the way down to very, very small markets that we have digital screens. So I was surprised, but now it's kind of become a focus. When we talk about out of home to our programmatic agencies and DSPs, we talk about how do we use layers of data? How do we use real-time social conversations that are happening to have those screens become more important in the overall conversation of a consumer's journey from mobile to social to now out of home?
And is Lamar's role in this to make the out-of-home specialists and the programmatic platforms and so on aware and tapped into the range of inventory you have available, or do you actually get involved in the creative thinking behind a project?
Yeah, so on both sides, we're constantly, on the out-of-home specialist side, we're constantly asking for the brief so that we can have some brainstorming sessions internally. And we take all the different data that we have and we start to kind of build out concepts and creative. And then we'll share that back with the out-of-home agency or the brand direct or the creative agency. So there is a lot of learning, but I know Outfront has created Outfront Studios. Lamar, we have our own version of that internally, to where we're really putting a lot of time as an industry, putting a lot of time and effort into showcasing our capabilities, but not just saying, hey, we have the ability to stream real-time Instagram photos, but actually taking that and putting together what we call mocks and concepts and then sharing them back to the agency so that they actually have something tangible that they can show these different creative agencies and brands, as opposed to just saying, here's our inventory and you know what our capabilities are. Good luck.
Yeah, I would imagine this is more of a nurturing thing. I could see, you know, out-of-home specialist looking at that at first glance and going, oh, they're competition to us, but that's not what you're doing here, right?
Yeah, not at all. It's constantly educating everyone that's willing to buy the space and making sure they're using it to its full capabilities. Nothing's more frustrating than to see someone purchase a digital board just because they wanted that location, and to have the same content play for 4, 8, 6 weeks, as opposed to seeing a brand come in and truly utilizing the medium the way it should be. I always say, look, buy the static board or the bus shelter 500 feet away if that's the way you're going to buy the medium.
Is it a challenge right now in the marketplace? I was just talking to Burr Smith on the podcast that's up right now from BroadSign about programmatic and the wide range of programmatic options out there and how there's DSPs and SSPs and things that seem to be hybrids and so on. Is it a challenge to try to stay on top of that and plugged into it all?
Yeah, it is. And Burr's a great guy. And BroadSign Reach is actually one of our SSPs that has access to Lamar inventory, as well as Vistar, Place Exchange, and Hivestack. One of my roles with Lamar is to make sure that we're not just exposing our inventory to every supply side platform or DSP that pops up. As you can imagine, someone that has 3,300 large format screens across 160 DMAs, we could quickly make a company or a startup. So it's important to us to make sure we're finding partners that are dedicated into the space. They understand the medium. They may have the sales staff that's going to go out and help go alongside of these vendors. And most importantly, and this may sound odd coming from an out-of-home company, but most importantly is they have a wide variety of screens within their SSP, because I hear more and more when a brand or a DSP connects and goes into a supply side platform and says, okay, there's three vendors in here and I can't get enough coverage across, or I don't have the scale that I need. So it's important for us to find true partners that are truly built into the space. And I would say Burr's spot on. It's important for us to make sure that we're on top of who we're partnering with, but also understanding that we don't need a partner with everyone that comes to the table and says, hey, I'm a supply side platform.
Yeah, I do a fair amount of consulting, and I'll get emails and phone calls from companies who are starting up and saying, we're going to do some sort of an ad exchange. We're setting up a programmatic platform. And I just, listen and say, you realize it's a pretty saturated market already. What's the percentage, if you can tell me, of the numbers of companies that come to you that you say, sorry, you need to get to this scale, or you need to be doing this, or we just can't work with you right now?
Well, it's pretty significant, because one of the things that they're not understanding, folks like Michael Provenzano at Vistar, he started this platform almost 8-9 years ago, and Lamar was the first large format. And before that, he was just dealing with place-based screens. So the idea that you can just come in now the way that maybe Vistar did back in the day and have some sort of runway, I probably get 3 to 5 phone calls a week or emails that say, hey, we have an SSP and we'd love to connect. And this is who we're promised. We're working with Google. And there's a lot of red flags, doing this for quite some time. But you realize that it is important, because you physically would make one of these companies if you just gave access and said, yeah, let me spread it across everyone. But and here's the most important reason why. Is because those four partners that I mentioned, there's so much demand that happens, and it's different than the online space, where it's basically almost infinite space, where the out-of-home space, the last time I checked with OAAA, it's around 9,000 digital screens or so. So when you start to look at scale and ability to sell, what you start to see is you'll start to see some of these SSPs outbid each other, even within their own inventory. So if you have 10, 20 different supply side, you may start losing pretty significant buys because you partnered with this startup that has a small local client that you allowed them to buy for 1 hour. And now that 1 hour campaign is outbidding a large big box retailer that's trying to buy a significant amount of space over time. So it really becomes a scale and a supply issue. So you want to make sure you have the best possible partners that are out there that have the best possible integrations with DSPs, digital agencies, and brands on the programmatic side.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit screenfeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that, and then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
As we see more and more LED technology come out and variations in terms of LCD technology, I'm seeing more and more formats. And I'm curious if that is a challenge on both on your side and on the creative side to deal with so many different shapes that seem to be available out in the marketplace. How do you produce stuff that fits all that?
Yeah, you can't see me, but I'm smiling because so many people forget about this, because in the online space, there's very few sizes that they have to provide, and they can obviously have massive reach.
And they have standards. So they've got the IAB.
Correct. So what we're seeing is we're seeing more of the out-of-home companies. I sit on the innovations committee for the OAAA alongside of Dan Levy. And we talk about this often, is how do we minimize as many sizes and narrow down? So Lamar's inventory, and I would probably say the same for the big three out front and Clear Channel as well, about 95% of our inventory, if not higher, fits two specific sizes. Outside of that, they're either just small screens that we picked up with different buys that were different companies that we purchased that we're looking to transition over, or it just makes sense because that's the size screen. So we internally, just for our own clients' sake, we try to keep those sizes pretty standard. And I would highly recommend to anyone that's in looking to get into the digital screen business, not even programmatic, is to keep those sizes to a minimum. And I know the industry is trying to come with certain standards because we do have control. We're the ones that go to the manufacturers and ask for the size. So in the programmatic space, for a while, we were only supplying inventory for 95% of our inventory because it was easy for them to sell through. Now we've slowly integrated a few sizes because they are important, but it is something where you will not get a buy because it costs the agency, it costs the brand more money to create 20, 25 different sizes for a brand as opposed to online. They can just run across six and hit the whole world.
If you look at an environment like Times Square, there's no standardized format at all. There's just, there's wraparounds, there's stuff that's extremely tall and skinny and everything else. Are you in Times Square? And is that environment an anomaly in terms of where digital out of home is at?
Yeah, so Lamar isn't in Times Square on the digital side of screens. And again, it is an anomaly. I don't see any of that space being sold programmatic because it's such high demand, high one-offs. And as we've all seen, a lot of those screens are more going towards the building owners and the landowners that are actually selling out these screens. So I would have a million different signs if I had a Times Square. I think that that's a one-off situation. But you do see some of these city centers, and Lamar has one in Columbus, Ohio. That's kind of downtown Columbus, and it has a bit of a wrap. And we do have issues as far as creative. Hey, you have to create a different size, and we have to sell through the why you should spend the money to make this different creative is often harder than selling the space itself. So it's important. It's important to stay away from wide various sizes just because you kind of think it's cool and it looked good in the environment.
Yeah, and Times Square seems to be this race in terms of scale of display and pitch, the dot pitch of the LEDs that I don't think is sustainable on a broad basis for a company like Lamar. Or necessary.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. Is it worth investing the amount of money that you have to put into the space for a Times Square, understanding that you will have to update your screen more often than you do in the traditional roadside space? Because again, it seems like every year a new sign is being replaced and it's the latest, greatest pixels. So that is a key factor on why you see a lot of large format companies, including Lamar, just not playing in that space.
Do you do, or more accurately, the out-of-home specialists and the brands you work with, are they doing much on the interactive side? You're starting to see things where there's a timer and a countdown and everybody stand in a certain area because there's a camera that's going to grab you and post a group selfie and so on. I wonder whether those are novelties that'll be used once, or is that fundamental to how you do things for certain brands?
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Martin Porter, SVP over at PosterScope, we talk about this all the time. When a brand comes over and they want to do a cool one-off interactive experience, let's say with JetBlue, where you stand in front of this screen, or one of my favorites is the Pepsi Max, where they created augmented reality built into the bus shelter, and it looked like there was a
alien invasion, right?
Yeah, super cool, but the amount of money and time that they put into it, it's purely built because of they want to get the PR factor. And a lot of times you see that in the brief. We do get those briefs, but Lamar's a bit different in where we are. So how we come back is we'll say, hey, look, we'll piggyback on top of that. We do a lot of real-time Twitter feeds, Instagram feeds that are streaming in live to our digital screens. But that's about as interactive as we get is using those dynamic capabilities as opposed to. And we'll participate in it. I think it's cool to have a photo booth built into a bus shelter, or using your mobile screen as a augmented reality to have that ad or that painting wall paint come to life.
Is there stuff or creative approaches that work better than other approaches with digital out of home?
Yeah, it's, and it varies obviously by campaign and the KPIs of the campaign. But what we see is, again, know the environment that you're in, right? So know that most of the people driving past are surface streets, 40 plus miles an hour, interstates, 70 plus miles an hour. So what we find is that if it's relevant at the moment, and it doesn't have to have dynamic content, but even just rotating your creative out throughout the day, but just simple, big, bold creative, small messages, limited text, but have it have the ability to talk in that moment in time. And where we've really seen success as an industry, and Lamar as well, is when we tie mobile with out of home. So understand that we understand that we're not the only medium that'll be a part of that media mix, but we have to make sure that throughout that consumer's journey, and mobile is something that we do work in, to where that consumer may drive past that ad and it may be for Muscle Milk, but then when that consumer goes to the gym, we then geofence that gym and then we serve that consumer an ad for Muscle Milk again. So when we talk about reach and frequency and relevancy, it also has to do with multiple screen types. And if you, I would encourage people, if you don't have the ability to sell mobile, then when you're having the broader conversation or the pitch, make sure you say, hey, look, let's make sure that all of our creatives align with all the media mix that you talk about. I feel that that's the biggest opportunity for the out-of-home space today, is to really be relevant, is have cool creative that talks in the moment, but has its extension onto the mobile device.
That's not Lamar serving the mobile ad, though. That's just, that's part of the sort of the coordination of the of those ads, or am I, what's going on there?
Yeah, of course. So a lot of, including Lamar, a lot of out-of-home companies have partnered with third-party mobile companies. So we do sell mobile alongside of out of home. We have mobile partners that do that for us. But then on top of it, to your point, often we run into is the agency may not handle the mobile component, but we can then make sure that they're having that conversation to say, hey, here's some statistics that show that when you include mobile with out of home, we see click-through rates rise 56% above industry average. Let's make sure that these creatives are consistent throughout.
When I was at the National Retail Federation show and a couple other shows I've been at this year, I've seen nothing but retail intelligence, audience intelligence platforms. They seem to be springing up like weeds. And I've seen some companies, AdMobilize comes to mind, that has focused on digital out of home and providing analytics in terms of traffic flow and everything else. Is that something that you guys use, and is it a demand by the brands to have that kind of level of insight in terms of what's happening?
Yeah, I think, and I love Rodolfo and those guys at AdMobilize. They do a great job, and we've tested their product. We actually tested it in Sturgis during Bike Week for Geico.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, perfect opportunity. So, what
interesting demographic.
Exactly. Very interesting demographic. But what we did was, is we made sure that we used their technology to say, let's count the number of motorcycles, which I, in my mind, it was a bit cheating because 99% of the vehicles that drive during that week at Sturgis are in fact motorcycles, but we were able. Yeah.
And 99% of those are Harleys.
Exactly. But we were able to go back, which is great because you talk about machine learning and artificial intelligence. We used the technology to go back and say, you know, Geico, you guys used your motorcycle ad. And again, this was a classic static billboard as opposed to digital. And we were able to say, hey, of the people exposed to that ad, 98% were motorcycles. And then on top of that, what the industry can start to do is potentially use that technology to say, hey, based on real time, we can have creative change dynamically based on the vehicle types. And we've prototyped that a while back with Transformers and with Chevy. But to be able to give a little bit more insights to the audience on highways, and come back to the consumers and say, this is the type of vehicle that's more exposed, is it's kind of cool. I think the technology is better suited for airports and transit to understand the demographics of the consumer and also the glance, how long that consumer is exposed to the ad. I think that that's where the true use of that technology is in the out-of-home space.
Yeah, I've said for years and years that a lot of the parlor tricks that get associated with computer vision are kind of fun and interesting, but what's really valuable is understanding how long people actually looked at the ad and looked at this ad versus that ad.
Right, exactly. And then if it's digital, maybe change the creative, whether people are engaged or not.
Mm-hmm. Last question. You've got a huge amount of experience in this space and contacts with everybody. If for somebody coming into the industry, what's that one key piece of advice you'd say to them?
Well, I was talking about this internally the other day as we onboard new employees. Really, it's so easy for you just to decline meetings with people, but I think it's extremely important. I think I got where I am by constantly taking meetings with companies, whether it's attribution, data companies, technology companies. Be well-versed in it. And there's a plethora of knowledge and great amount of people that are passionate about this space, including myself, that love sharing. So often people just don't reach out and they try to just kind of slug through it on their own and their own experiences. There's a lot of people in the space that have tried and failed. I often say partner with people, test the technology that they're bringing to rather than just look through a PDF deck. You know, ask them. That's what we did with AdMobilize. Ask them to send the technology down, install it by your Coke machine, play with the data. So get your hands dirty and have fun. And don't be afraid to offer something up for free, you know. Give the agency the opportunity and say, hey, we, the vendor, is going to pay for this technology if you utilize it and we'll learn together. That's the best success that we've seen. That way, you're not having to do the heavy lifting and learning and then having to reteach when you go to sell it to the brand or the agency. They've actually been involved in the process. So that would be my bit of advice.
Good advice, Ian. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around for more than 2 years. You can click around the archive and find more than 100 conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9 at 16-9.net. There are now more than 6,000 posts in there about this industry. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside beautiful, amazing Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.